Good afternoon. Hello, my name is Anne Hagee, and I will be giving the pre-opera concert talk. Welcome to San Francisco Opera's production of Elektra, composed by Richard Strauss in 1908 and first performed in Dresden on the 25th of January, 1909. The libretto was written by Hugo von Hofmannsthal, adapted from his 1903 drama of the same name. The San Francisco Opera first performed Elektra in 1938, and this SF Opera production, directed by Keith Warner, debuted on September 9th, 2017. With an orchestra of over 100 instrumentalists, tonight's performance is conducted by San Francisco Opera music director, Maestro Eun Sun Kim. Elektra is a unique opera. As an audience member, you are thrown into the eye of the storm, the center of action from the moment the opera begins. You remain in this intense family drama without relief through to its ending 1 hour and 40 minutes later. We can imagine this work as a sprint, an all-out force of a story where from the opening moments, Strauss places us in a home that is in extreme turmoil, giving us little backstory. We are thrown into the center of a story of systemic violence that is generations in the making. Through his orchestration, Strauss sonifies the internal worlds of each character and the ways that they all bear the burden of the cycles of violence that surround them. In this talk today, I will review the legacy of violence that permeates this family structure to give you the plot you need to understand why each character suffers in the way that they do and what motivates their actions. From here, I will explore the development of the Elektra character from the original Greek tragedies through Hofmannsthal's 1903 Fin de Siècle Vienna-infused being to what Elektra can mean for us today. I will then describe Strauss's orchestration choices and how the music creates and reinforces the roles and reality of each character. Finally, I will prepare you for your role as an audience member, because you are a part of this story. I strongly believe that opera is a kind of cultural technology, a collective way of asking important questions through story and song. In this work, we are here to collectively engage with and witness the impact of cycles of violence on a family system, with the opportunity to consider how we end these cycles. So let's begin with the story, but actually we must begin generations before. Elektra's story and the cycles of violence that surround her begin much earlier, and here we will build a mental map together of Elektra's family tree, as it is crucial to understand the generational trauma that precedes today's story. There are many versions of these myths, and for today, I have tried to keep things simple. If I had PowerPoint, you would see a family tree, but we don't have that, so I'm going to give you locations for these different people. So we can imagine a family tree here, and at the top, we have Tantalus. He is the son of Zeus, and he wanted to make an offering to the gods to trick them. And so he murdered his own son, Pelops, and attempted to feed him to the gods. Yes. The gods were not tricked, and they banished Tantalus, and they brought Pelops back to life. So we have Tantalus and then Pelops. Pelops had two children, Atreus, who is Elektra's grandfather, and Thyestes, his brother. Thyestes was angry that his brother Atreus became the king of Mycenae, and thought this was unfair. Thyestes seduces his brother, Atreus' wife. Atreus finds out, and in an act of vengeance, kills Thyestes' sons, cooks them, and feeds them to Thyestes. Yes. Not beyond this, Thyestes isn't so great. In an act of incest, Thyestes rapes his own daughter, who becomes pregnant with Aegis. This is who becomes Clytemnestra's lover in our story. When Aegisthus is born, his mother abandons him, ashamed of his origin, and he is raised by shepherds. Agis later goes on to avenge the killing of his siblings, and he kills Atreus. Atreus has three children, and the oldest is Agamemnon, Electra's father. He becomes the king of Mycenae. Clytemnestra is forced to marry Agamemnon and has four children with Agamemnon, Iphigenia, Chrysothemis, Orestes, and Electra. And so we arrive at today's generation. In Greek mythology, Electra is a princess of Mycenae and the daughter of Agamemnon and Clytemnestra. This myth forms the foundation of Greek tragedies of the same name by Sophocles and Euripides. These were written between 410 and 420 BC. These works were actually preceded by Aeschylus's Oresteia, which is a collection of three plays, Agamemnon, The Libation Bearers, and The Eumenides. These three plays are fundamental to our understanding of the Electra story. In the Agamemnon story, this explains that Clytemnestra was forced to sacrifice her firstborn, Iphigenia, to the gods to allow Agamemnon's troops to arrive in Troy. While Agamemnon is in Troy, Clytemnestra, angry at the sacrifice of Iphigenia, takes a lover, who is Agis, the son of Thyestes. Yes, this same one. And as an act of revenge, the two murder Agamemnon. This is what Electra actually witnessed and remembers, this murder of Agamemnon. The second play, The Libation Bearers, is the story of this opera, Electra, and depicts Electra's drive for revenge, her reunion with her lost brother, Orestes, and Orestes' murder of their mother, Clytemnestra. Finally, the third play, which I think is really important to remember, is The Eumenides. The Eumenides describes how the Furies, goddesses who are instruments of justice, haunt Orestes for the murder of his mother, which is considered the highest of crimes. Pleading for Athena's help, Athena grants Orestes a trial before 12 Athenian citizens, where they find the murder of his mother permissible, as it was avenging the murder of his father. This is the first instance in literature of rule by law, creating a path to end cycles of violence through law. Within this context, we can understand this opera of the Electra myth as a study in the emotion and psychology present in the act of revenge, which in its root questions how we heal from trauma and how we raise the next generation without passing down our wounds and grievances to those who come after us. This is Electra's family. She is born from this soil, and her life is filled with the continuation of this history. Librettist Hugo von Hofmannsthal rewrites Electra's story in some very important ways. Hofmannsthal created a new Electra from the zeitgeist of 1903 Vienna. At this time, Europe, and particularly Vienna, was engulfed in a morbid obsession with pushing the limits of everything to find meaning. Hofmannsthal created a new Electra constructed using methods of psychoanalysis that would speak to the turn of the century Viennese audiences. Hofmannsthal remarked that, quote, while he was writing the libretto for Richard Strauss's opera Electra, he consulted Freud's study of hysteria, etiology of hysteria, and sexuality in the etiology of neuroses again and again, end quote. This is obvious in the construction of Electra. Her obsession with her father parallels the Oedipal complex. Jung and later Freud admit to the similarity, naming the female version of the Oedipal complex the Electra complex. Describing Electra in Freudian terms, Electra has been traumatized by witnessing the murder of her father by her mother. She experiences this while in her sexually formative years, a time when she would have had her father as her sexual object. She is therefore stuck in this event and is unable to move forward. Her father remains her sexual object, which becomes interwoven with her obsession with revenge and anger towards her mother. Electra literally translates in Greek to unmated. She is sexually stunted in her growth, and in Hofmannsthal's libretto, has no desire to move forward or become a mother. Her desire is only for revenge. And she says in the opera, "I'm fattening up a vulture in my flesh." Electra exclaims this to the servants who surround her in the first scene. Electra, in some ways, bears a different child, one of hatred and one of revenge. As a response to the instability of her home, Electra searches for control. She is displayed as an impotent character, unable to even assist in the crime of killing her mother by providing the axe as she had planned. Yet she is a threatening character. She threatens the stability of the court. The overseer is quick to punish the fifth servant who displays her loyalty to Electra and so the past regime. It is also clear that Aegisth and Clytemnestra find her threatening when they plan to imprison Electra in a tower. Perhaps Electra is analogous to the soapbox bemoaner who does little in action, but succeeds in rallying others to act. She is the initiator, and in such a politically unstable state as Argos, this would be very threatening. But who was this threatening person for Vienna at the turn of the century? Fin de siècle, Vienna had many insecurities. This time was a period of uncertainty and anxiety for the bourgeoisie, based in many things, including extension of political participation and socialist strength, a loosening of what had been a strict class structure, and the collapse in the belief of progress with the 1873 Depression. Electra could represent any of these causes of insecurity, but she most definitely represents the beginnings of the emancipation of women and the fear that this invoked. Electra desired power and was constantly attempting to wield it. Even in her final scene, she says, "We are with the gods, we accomplishers." She sees herself as the leader of this tribe of avengers. "All are waiting for me. I know it, that they all are waiting for I must lead the dancing, but I cannot." Electra is yet trapped. Her obsession constricts her to the point that she is unable to act, but yet she knows and desires a life of power, a life where she would be able to control her own fate. In this way, she represents the woman of 1903, who yearns for the ability to act, but is not yet fully empowered. And now we come to today. How can we help this 1903 version of Electra speak to us today in 2026? Elements of Warner's staging help to modernize the production. The stage opens to a present-day museum gallery where Electra is pondering an exhibit of detritus from her life, including the axe used to murder Agamemnon, masks from the servants in the castle, and clothing worn by members of the household. While in the museum, she is flooded with traumatic memories of her childhood and her life. The opera, therefore, unfolds as an extension of her memory. The museum becomes her childhood home, a mid-century American upper-middle-class homestead, reminding us that these stories of domestic violence and the woundings of our lives with our families and the trauma that has preceded us are, unfortunately, a shared human story. It is through the music that we feel the psychological weight of this work. Strauss personifies these inner disturbances through his music, giving voice to the character's ruminations and obsessions. The opening begins with scurrying motives in the first and second violins, echoed in the English horn and heckelphone. This agitated mood is dispelled at the memory of her father, accompanied by kingly chords using horns and triads, outlining a quarter note triplet figure. This broad and open space quickly narrows as Electra's narrative becomes more gruesome, describing the murder of her father. Helping the audience to follow Electra into her obsessive state, this agitation again opens into her more romantic desire for a dance macabre. The open chords and horn-dominated melody of her sickly dance upon her father's grave is orchestrated to be heroic and larger than life. But the audience is quickly reminded that this is only in Electra's imagination, dissipating immediately upon Chrysothemis' entrance and returning to the original motives of anxious, flurrying gestures. Throughout the opera, we hear Agamemnon's ghostly name in the primary theme, a syllabic representation of his name, Agamemnon. D-A-F-D. We hear it as Electra remembers the murder of her father as she sings his name. First musical clip, please. The Agamemnon theme weaves its way through the musical material in the same way that this murder infects everything about this family system. We get rare moments of ease, as if Electra can, in fleeting moments, remember her life before the murder, a time of true childhood and connected family. This music of ease is often interwoven in duet with her sister, Chrysothemi, and symbolizes the potential to move past this trauma to become the mother they didn't have or start a family with love that was missing in their home. In this way, Electra's sister symbolizes one response to trauma, leaving it behind and moving forward by healing through creating what you lacked. Electra stands as another response to trauma, facing the trauma head on and trying to write it in whatever way you know how. And for Electra, this is revenge. Whereas Electra is haunted by this clear theme and a sense of heroic urgency, Clytemnestra, her mother, is plagued by an inability to find clarity. She complains to Electra of her dreams and inability to sleep and thinks that stones and rituals will absolve her. She can't admit to her own actions or take responsibility, and so she can't grow or move from this mired mental state. Strauss perfectly captures this in the low, swirling bass register that accompanies Clytemnestra. In this example, she says, "It is not a word. It is not a pain. It does not press me. It does not choke me. It is nothing, not even a nightmare. And yet, it is such dread." Next musical clip.
Es trügt mich nicht. Es lügt mich nicht. Nichts ist es. Nicht einmal ein Alp.
Electra is like her mother. She dreams of revenge like her mother. Still, one of the beauties of this story is that through Clytemnestra, we see what will become of Electra if she avenges her father's death. We see how the killing of Agamemnon ravages Clytemnestra. She can't live with herself. She can't sleep. She has nightmares. She drinks excessively. She is easily swayed by others, and she has lost her own center. She is consumed by her choice to kill Agamemnon, and because of this, tears apart her children and fails to care for them. Clytemnestra, as she herself states, has aged beyond her years through her choices. Electra, on the other hand, is young. Electra in this story is youthful, sometimes described as young as 14, and at the oldest is in her early 20s. Strauss captures Electra's youth beautifully with the Wild Waltz, a dance macabre that breaks into the orchestration in moments. When I hear it, I am reminded of the ballet The Red Shoes, as the speed and leaps within this waltz motive feel unsustainable, and it sometimes rocks between modes sounding alternatingly major and minor, creating something familiar and yet deeply unstable. Here is the waltz motive with Electra stating, "And we your own flesh and blood, your son Orestes, or your son Orest and your daughter. Once all this is accomplished and the purple canopies are raised and the sun has drawn up the mist of blood, then we, your kin, shall dance around your grave." Next musical clip.
Und beer, beer, mein Blut, take the rest. Deine Töchter, wir drei, wenn alles dies vollbracht, von Bäumen geteilt, aufgerichtet sind, Gunst des Blutes, wenn die Sonne noch sich zieht, dann tanzen wir.
We hear the waltz motive with Electra singing the Agamemnon theme above as a culmination of heroic arrival. Final musical clip. For me, I can see the dancing. Can you see the dancing in that orchestration? Here we see Strauss's skill in making variations of his themes that imply the complicated and slippery psychological space that this opera describes. So although this work is sometimes cited as an example of the hysteric woman trope, I wonder if Electra's humanity lies in us, the listener. She has changed over these thousands of years to match our needs for this story. If we approach this work with the intention of deep empathy, if we see in Electra the 10-year-old child who witnesses incredible violence in her home, if we then understand that this deeply wounded human obsessively ruminates on the memory of this moment. She is neglected, she is abandoned by her own mother, who proceeds to marry the man who murdered her father, who both then refuse to acknowledge Electra as a member of the family. Electra becomes a servant in her own home. Her brother is banished and possibly killed. Her life has unraveled from the moment of Agamemnon's murder, which she replays over and over. How can such a person find peace? Electra is not hysterical. She is suffering. And in her suffering, she longs most for closure, to turn off this memory loop, to release her from the moment of her father's death, to end the cycle of violence. Strauss asks us to feel for Electra, to feel for the whole family. He demands that we sit with the chaos and instability and violence that is Electra's reality, to feel it, and to feel for her. This story stands as a testament to the suffering of all to violence. And perhaps Strauss, through this work, is reminding us that rule of law may not be the only or final answer to cycles of violence, that perhaps it is the empathy and love found in our witnessing of the suffering of others and in opening our hearts to this suffering that we find this end. So I hope you all enjoy this performance. Thank you.